Hi, ladies, and welcome to the Story Night podcast. I'm Jessica Campbell, and stories are my passion. It's my honor to host this podcast where real women share real stories of real hope. Each episode features one woman sharing her personal story with you. Too often, we fall into the traps of comparison and judgment, but what if we took the time to hear each other's real stories? Let's remember that we all have a story, and our stories matter. We're so glad you've joined us on this podcast journey. May you find hope and encouragement in this episode's story. Hi, ladies, and thank you for tuning into this episode of the Story Night podcast. If this is your first time finding us, we're so glad you're here. Welcome. We highly recommend checking out episode one so that you get to hear all about Story Night, the vision, the history, the purpose, just get a sense of who we are and what we're doing. And if you've been with us for a long time, you may remember that we have done a series of episodes where you get to meet the Story Night team. And we did that earlier in the podcast, and my sweet Susan, bless her heart, she sent me her outline, and we were supposed to record this way back months ago in the spring. And things kept coming up. We've rescheduled, what, five times now, it feels like? but we finally get to record Susan's story. And she is one of my lovely Story Night volunteers who just jumped on board to help and support this outreach and has done all kinds of things behind the scenes. And now we get to hear her story. So thank you, Susan, so much for being here and for your patience in all the rescheduling.
Thank you for inviting me. I feel like the cancellations were just meant to happen. It was just the right timing of when we could finally get together and I could collect my thoughts and, you know, think about what to say today.
Yeah. Well, let's start with just you introducing yourself to the listeners, just a little who you are today, and then we'll go back and start at the beginning.
Okay. I'm Susan Nagel. I'm 59 years old, excited to celebrate my 60th birthday in December. I've lived in Oregon for 21 years. I'm from New Jersey. I have a husband, Scott. That's kind of the basics about me.
Well, we're going to rewind the tape. We're going to start at the beginning, and this is when I get to ask you to tell us where you were born, because you mentioned New Jersey, so now we have to figure out how you got from New Jersey to Oregon. Those are two very different places.
Yes.
So, yes, let's start with your birth and childhood.
Okay. I was born in 1965. My parents met at Penn State University and were married shortly after college. When they got married, they always planned to have children, and that didn't come as quickly as they would have liked. And probably after about 5 years of trying to have a family, they decided to adopt, and they adopted my brother, Chris. And very shortly after he was born, my mom found out she was pregnant.
Thank God that they got to have both your brother and you.
Right.
What a blessing. I think,
you know, just kind of like the all-American family, you know, parents and a son and a daughter.
Yeah.
So great childhood. I grew up in a town in southern New Jersey called Medford Lakes, and it was created as a town by people from the Philadelphia area who didn't want to go all the way to the beach for vacation. Mm-hmm. So this town was made of about 20 man-made lakes, and they built little log cabins around the lakes. The town is 1.2 square miles, so very small, but it was just a great little town in the New Jersey Pine Barrens to grow up in. I rode my bike to school every day until high school. I rode my bike home for lunch. My mom was a stay-home mom. It was just really happy times, good friends and neighbors. They had a really cool camp in the summertime that you went to for about a month. What I liked about it was there were some kids that you'd only see at the camp every summer. They might go to a different school, so it was really neat to reunite with those same people that you had become summer friends with every year. So that's the kind of town that it was growing up in, just, you know, very wholesome.
Yeah,
I think fondly on it, and I always like to go back and visit. Not as often as I'd like, but I still love to get back there. Church was a big part of my family growing up, and the church in our town was called Cathedral in the Woods. It was also a large log cabin with beautiful stained glass windows, and that was just a regular part of my life. We went to church every Sunday, And I guess another key thing in my life was my parents were really into skiing, and there was a little place called Pine Hill, so it was just a little bump of a ski hill. So oftentimes on the weekends, and when I got older and was a teenager, I became a ski instructor there. So that was a big family event that we would do. They'd take me out of school for a week and we'd go skiing someplace special. But this little Pine Hill place was nearby and we would ski there often. So I think I probably learned how to ski when I was 3 or so. So that was a good memory. In
Cool.
high school, I played a lot of tennis. I was really social. I got involved in an organization called Young Life. A friend of mine invited me to a night at someone's house, and it's a Christian organization. It's not affiliated with schools, but it's a national organization. And like I said, too, I was very social. My brother was the book person, but when it came to school, I don't remember too much about my classes. I just remember all the activities. And Young Life was a big part of my high school years. One summer, I even worked at one of their camps, and it was a special part of my high school years. And then when I went to college, I went to Westchester University. I remember since I said I wasn't a huge studier, I was worried that I would never go to college and crying to my mom, "Oh, there's no school that's going to take me. I don't get good enough grades." And my mom said, "There's a school for everyone." And I wanted to be a teacher. She helped me decide that, I have to say. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but instead of just not having any goal, my mom thought it was important that I pick something. And then if that didn't work out, that was okay, but at least you have a goal. So I decided I wanted to be a teacher, and I went to Westchester in just over the bridge in Pennsylvania, about an hour from where I grew up. And I'm happy that I did that. I think I have a teaching nature. When I was younger, some of my jobs were at camps, teaching swimming, teaching tennis. So I just sort of fell into place with my personality and what I thought I might be good at.
Right. It is one of those degrees that does lend itself into so many fields.
Yes.
Even if you don't end up being like a full-time elementary or secondary teacher, all the things that you learn really can impact in so many other endeavors.
I think that going there was great experience. I think I kind of carried on that theme in college that my social activities were a little bit more important than my studies. And within the first couple of weeks that I attended Westchester, a girl that was a local that went to Westchester introduced me to someone, a guy that she went to high school with. And we ended up being a couple for my entire college experience. His name was Lance. He was joining the military, and so we only dated for a few weeks, and then he went off to basic training. And back in those days, I wrote him a letter literally every day. And back then, they had you put your social security number on the address, on the outside of
Really?
the envelope. So I still remember his social security number. It's just a fun fact.
Was that just for the military, like writing to and from the military?
Yeah.
Okay, this wasn't like something
No.
in our history that I'm not remembering where we had to do that with all letters everywhere.
It just happened to, it was a part of, I guess, finding him, or, it was a military thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So he ended up being stationed about an hour away from my college in Dover, Delaware. That allowed for our relationship to be mixed in with my college experience for all the 4 years. And he was a great boyfriend, and I was also involved in Young Life in college as a leader instead of as just one of the kids in my class. I love being a part of that outside of school. Young Life was good to me in high school, so it was neat to be able to give back as a college student. So I did finish college with plans to be a teacher. And I did teach in a number of schools over the course of a couple years. But it was interesting back then. It was when I was graduating from college, I guess just a lot of women that maybe took time off from being teachers were coming back to the workforce. And I was competing for positions with people that had experience. So it was really hard to find a teaching job. So I'd get one that might be for 6 months. maybe a teacher was out on maternity leave, and then they would be coming back. So I'd have to start looking again. Eventually, I decided, oh, I'll teach in the Philadelphia public school system. There's lots of jobs available there. And so I did get a couple of jobs in Philadelphia, but it was very rough. And even in elementary school, my very first job, I showed up. The teacher had been in that same classroom for maybe 25 years, and I visited her class before she was officially gone. And the first day, I just sat in the back and observed. And if the children were disruptive, she would make them all stand up and put their arms straight out and just stand there in that position until they settled down. Now, nowadays, you could never do that with your class. But they really respected this teacher, and she was gone. She retired, and I took over the class, and it was just like chaos. Over the course of my life, I've thought to myself, how come being nice is a negative quality? But that's kind of a theme sometimes in my difficult times in my life is, people can take advantage of you if you're a kind person. And I wanted to be nice, but it's hard to be that. And, I was young. So there I am with these students. They had a teacher that was probably, in her 50s or 60s, and here I come, practically fresh out of college, and they know they can kind of work the system
Oh,
and get their
completely.
way. So I struggled with that, but I kept at it. Every day I remember driving over the Ben Franklin Bridge from New Jersey to my class, and every day, if the day before was a rough one, when I show up, I just say, it's a fresh new day, it's a new start. We're gonna have a great day. But a lot of times, it was really challenging to get the kids to behave and so that you could actually teach. So that went on for a while.
And now
And
at this point, did Lance go off to the military or are you still together?
we were not together anymore. After college, I ended it because I could tell he never wanted to make the relationship more serious, make a commitment. And if you said marriage or went to a wedding or something and it wouldn't bring up the subject of marriage, it would become uncomfortable. And, he'd call it the M word and things like that.
Well,
So I was like,
there's a
okay.
flag for you.
Right. So I could tell he was not wanting that in his life. I didn't want to break up with him, but I could tell he wanted to break up with me because the relationship wasn't going anywhere anymore. But that was okay. You
Somebody
know,
else is going to come along in your story.
it was very hurtful at the
Of course.
time, but yeah, it just wasn't meant, he wasn't the person.
No, you're going to meet and marry another man here soon in the story. But at the point of your story that we're in right now, you're in your 20s, you're teaching, it's a rough class. And I mean, at that point, were you searching for your Prince Charming, looking for love, trying to find
Yes.
that
And I
person?
did end up meeting a guy named Bill, and he was a wonderful guy also. We got along great. I enjoyed being his girlfriend, but I went with Lance for 5 years, and then when I was with Bill, I could kind of see some of those same signs, and I thought, I'm not going to let this carry on for another 5 year time frame. And I think after about 2.5 years, I thought, this is it. If he's not the one, then that relationship has to end too.
So during this time frame of, you're living on your own, there were some life lessons that you were going to encounter. And this particular topic is one that I don't think it's talked about a lot, but I imagine a lot of women listening will relate to this in some way. And that is the overuse of credit cards.
Yes. So I think that time frame in my life is the most unclear, like going back in your memories, all the orders of things. But at some point, I did move out. I was living at home for quite a little while after I finished college. But at some point, when I was felt like I was really firmly established with a job, I moved out with a roommate, and I don't think I had a lot of education about spending or managing your finances, and it was really tempting to just go out and shop. So I did that, and I One time I do remember I had a credit card bill that was in the top dresser drawer when I was still living at home. And I came home and my mom was very angry with me. And I'd never seen her behave like that before. And I was so embarrassed, but I'd spent too much money on my credit card. And she saw that. And she helped me out by helping, like, I paid her and she helped me pay the bills. But it was still a struggle for quite a few years. I even went to a company that helped you with credit card debt, where you would pay them and they would help pay your bills. But they were pretty high, several thousand dollars. And that was a lot of money for me back then, when I still had to pay my rent and my car insurance and all of those things. Yes, so we will get to the point then where I met my husband, Scott. We met at an apartment complex at the swimming pool, and I had all this debt going on in my life back then, and I had left teaching at this point, and I was working in retail. He saw me talking to somebody, and I was reading a book, and he calls out and he's like, "What are you reading?" So just from him trying to engage with me, I knew that he was interested, and I thought it was also kind of typical, like when you're not looking for someone in your life is when the right person comes along. He went and did his thing at the pool. I said to somebody when I was leaving, "Hey, that guy that's down there in the pool, do you know his name, or do you know if he has a girlfriend?" And they said, "No, I don't think so." And I said, "Well, my name's Susan and I live in apartment 3208. If he's interested, I'm interested." And so he said they told him about this hours later when they were finished playing water polo, and he was like, "No way, you're lying to me that girl is interested." Well, he slipped a card under my door the next morning on his jog, and that started a conversation. I called him and we ended up going out on a date a couple weeks later, and the rest is history. We learned we had all kinds of things in common with our family's backgrounds, where they're from. As we got to know each other a little bit better, I was going to work and driving quite far. And one day I came out to the parking lot at our apartment complex. I come out to my car and it's not there. And I call the police and say, "My car's been stolen." And they're like, "No, your car hasn't been stolen. It was repossessed." So humiliating. But that's what happened, and I hardly knew Scott at this point, but I had nowhere else to turn. I didn't know how I was going to get my car back. I tried to pawn, some things that I had, like an expensive camera, and my dad did not know what kind of trouble I was in, but he knew I needed some money, but he didn't know about that with my car. But he occasionally would call me and do a drive-by where I would work and give me money. But after all that went on and Scott helped me get my car out of jail, our relationship was really moving ahead and he really helped me get out of my financial situation.
So he didn't go running for the hills. He's like, I'm gonna,
I couldn't believe that he would, stay with me after knowing, what trouble I was in. And he said he wouldn't give me money, that he would take me and help me get my car back, but he wouldn't pay for getting it out. But eventually, as our relationship continued to grow, he helped me get out of my debt, and we were only together as a dating couple for maybe less than 6 months, and he proposed, and then we got married a year and a half later. I love him. He is always supportive of me. He's very confident. I saw things about him where I could just be myself. I knew I was with the right person. So, kind of fast forward now, we've lived in Oregon for 21 years. Scott was in the wine business after he left working in the hotel business, and he always dreamed of working directly for a winery. And one day, Alex Sokolblosser from Sokolblosser Winery here in Oregon was doing the rounds with Scott in southern New Jersey, selling to their customers. And Scott said, "If you're ever looking for an East Coast rep, I'm interested." Alex said, "Well, we're looking for a national person, and if you took that job, you'd have to live in Oregon." And just a couple weeks prior to that happening, Scott and I, you know, we're from Pennsylvania, New Jersey. We were in our home for 3 years and just saying, you know, life is great. We like, everything's good, but it would really be neat to have some kind of a new challenge in our life and move somewhere different. And then this happened. You know, it was like our wishes came true. And it's been wonderful. We love it. We lived in Newburgh for 10 years. And after 10 years, we were kind of, you know, we had this big house, no kids. Why do we need all this extra space and paying, you know, a higher mortgage than probably necessary? Sold that house and moved to Carlton. And not in a million years did I think I would move to Oregon. But here we are, and it's just an amazing place. I think I always say that it's kind of like New Jersey on steroids because we still have beautiful trees. It's green. We have the ocean, but everything here is just bigger. Mm-hmm. And I think the best times in my life, and I had a great childhood. I love, you know, my parents are amazing, but I think living here, I've had so many wonderful experiences. I worked at Brighton at Washington Square Mall for 14 years. When I started there, we called it, like, we wanted to build what we called the dream team. And we did that. I worked with a lot of the same people for a good 10 years of the 14 that I was there. I would say the most meaningful years when I look back are probably the last 4 years of my life. The dream team was starting to move on. You know, some people were leaving the store and I had some new responsibilities. COVID happened. Mm-hmm. I wasn't ready to be a store manager. I was an assistant manager most of that time. And I just said, oh, I never want that responsibility. But after COVID, the store manager wanted to step down. And I was like, well, I don't want anybody new to come in and take over. I kind of know the lay of the land. I've been here for so long that I decided, well, okay, this is where my role is now. I should be the store manager. And I was given that opportunity, but it was a bad decision. I kind of knew from early on that it was like that nice part of me. It was hard to manage some people that were very controlling and it made things really difficult. And yeah. I was very unhappy. And it really had a major effect. From listening to other people that have done your podcast and talking about depression and the feelings they had, you know, I felt like not hungry and I wanted to just sleep, not motivated. I kind of lost my ability to talk. But in the long run, it went on for quite some time, probably, you know, a couple of years. But I definitely learned from it. And now I feel like I'm there for other people that have possibly experienced that and can be encouraging.
Sometimes those experiences are the hardest to navigate or pinpoint because mm-hmm. there are so many things that can happen in our lives that are very clear, right? Yeah. Somebody gets diagnosed with cancer. There's a death. There's a divorce. There's a abuse. You know, you fill in the blanks with some of these one or two words, everyone knows what it means. You know that it's big, it's overwhelming. You expect that there could be some anxiety or depression or grief. You know that you're expecting to respond emotionally, mentally, physically to something that is very hard, some trauma, some tragedy, right? But then there are also these other things in your life that something's off and something's hurting you or bothering you, but it's hard to understand. It's hard to pinpoint. You're not really sure why you're feeling the way you're feeling.
Right.
And if you try and explain it to somebody else, sometimes you don't have the right words and that other person is looking at you like,
well, some
what's
people
wrong?
Would say you're the store manager. You make the decisions. But somehow I felt trapped. And I felt a lot of it was because of one individual and how they were treating me. And they had authority in the store as well. And I wanted them to be happy. And I wanted them to be able to make decisions and have my respect. But a lot of it, what you're saying, it happened very gradually. Sure. And over time, I realized now I'm in this situation. And how do I go to my superiors and say things have been going on that have kind of made me turn into this depressed person? So I was just hanging on, holding it together. And a couple things that caused that time frame to happen was I was promoted, and just within a couple of months, I had a fall at the mall and I landed on my left shoulder and I fractured my humerus bone. And so there was some resentment at the store that I was now not there. I was the manager, and now I'm at home for 3 months recovering. And a lot of people at the store were running the show then, you know, and I think there was some interior anger towards me because I kind of left them high and dry. And then when I came back, by then, you know, people had authority to make decisions. So then for me to come in and kind of take that back, you know, was difficult. There was a lot of drama with the powers of who's got power here at the store. And then a year and a half later, I fell again skiing and I fractured my other arm in the same place. And I had to call from the emergency room up at Mount Hood Meadows and say, "You're not going to believe this, but I just fractured my other arm. I'm probably going to be out for another 3 months." So I think a lot of those things contributed to the environment that, you know, took place. So that was pretty tough.
And you're not there anymore.
So I'm not there anymore. And I guess, like I said, the most meaningful things that have happened in my life have been these difficult times in the last several years, but I've learned so much from it, and also about forgiveness, how to love somebody that is hard to love or forgive, how the way they treated you. But as a result of being off those times, eventually I regained strength and was able to speak up because I felt very silent during a lot of that time. I was able to have strength to speak up and point out things that I didn't think that were right. And the person that was really the contributing factor to all of that had lost a parent. And May of 24, my mom passed away from cancer. And so that January, I got a phone call that my mom had this diagnosis. And I told my team at work that, you know, I'm probably going to have to go be with my mom. And this individual was just really compassionate about that towards me. It was like it broke down a wall. We still probably had a lot of issues regarding work, but when it came to my mother, she understood.
Yeah.
And it had compassion. It just really felt like it lifted some of that tension.
And that's the heart of Story Night, the reason why we want to share our stories more and go to a deeper level of telling who we are and what we've been through and our experiences for that exact reason. It breaks down some barriers. It softens people towards each other, especially, I mean, at the time that of this recording, and probably it will always be that we're humans can just be really nasty to each other and very judgmental and very divisive. And, you know, you live on that island, and I live on this island, and there's just a lot of anger and hatred. And then you tell a story, and in your case, it's the loss of a parent, and suddenly another individual who had essentially been bullying you also had lost a parent.
Right.
And then, oh my gosh, now you're both two human beings that have gone through a particular suffering that's similar.
Right.
And we use the example, I mean, there's so many different types of examples of that where, you know, cancer doesn't care what your political party is, and abuse can happen to anybody, no matter what your socioeconomic background is, and or what your worldview is. All of these things, the sufferings we go through happen no matter what.
Right.
And they can really bridge somebody together. Oh my gosh, you went through that too? Like, I've experienced that. Suddenly there's this kind of bond because you speak the same language.
Right, right. And she went through that first. And so then when I'm going through it, it helps you to understand, wow, when they lost that parent, when their parent was sick, you can really relate and understand and have compassion more than, you know, not that you didn't have compassion before, but even more so when you realize, you know, that you're going through that, how that must have felt for them.
You've mentioned that you and your husband didn't have children. And so I just wanted to offer a moment for you to speak to that, because there are lots of women who never have children. And some of them, that is a very clear choice. They did not want to have children. And others, that is a deeply painful chapter of their lives as something that they always longed for and it didn't happen. How has that been for you
Right.
and where are you at now?
It's funny. I think sometimes I felt like maybe there's something wrong with me that, or I felt guilty not wanting to have children. But growing up, I think I always thought, oh, when you get married, you have a family. And when we got married, first we were in an apartment, and then the next thing is we purchased a home, then we got a dog, and then maybe the natural progression would be then to have a child. But we moved to Oregon, and now we're 3,000 miles away from any family. And I just thought, if we are here, I can't really rely on anybody to help me. And we were both really into our careers. So there were times when we thought, oh, should we have a child? And it just never was a deep feeling for me personally. And we both said, oh, well, if it happens, it happens. But we just never made a point to try and have kids. And I remember my aunt telling me one time, don't feel bad about it. Or, if it's a desire of your heart, God will give you a desire of your heart to have children if that's your desire. And I just feel like I never really had that desire. So I just think I've been used in other ways in my life for good and positivity. I have to say, I do have a very, very dear friend who went through a sad experience. Her daughter is still with us, but back when I was in my 20s and first out of college and having my first job, she was married and was pregnant with her second, and her first child was staying with somebody and was shaken, and it was very traumatic. And I question sometimes, I'm like, maybe I was fearful of having children and having bad things happen to them. I don't know for sure, but seeing her go through that with her family and her daughter, will never be the same. She has permanent brain damage as a result of that. So that was a big factor back then in, seeing my young friends with children, that would be really difficult. So maybe it was something I was avoiding. I don't know.
Well, I mean, there's a huge blessing in the fact that you and your husband are on the same page with this, because so often you have one that has a much stronger desire than the other for children, and that can be such a hard season to navigate. So I'm so glad to hear that that was something that you two got to navigate together and were on the same page and created a beautiful life together.
We always say, oh, I think we would have been great parents, but it just didn't work out that way. And
Well, you have such a tender heart and such a sweet spirit. I imagine any child would just curl up next to you and feel so loved and welcomed. And that kind of leads us to our closing point here, because you have talked a couple of times in your story about almost being too nice, right? And having to navigate that. And well, what does that look like? And how do you have a voice when you would like to just be nice to everybody? And when do you have that confidence to stick up for yourself and so forth? And I remember the dear friend who introduced us, that was one of the first things she said. She is the nicest lady I have ever met. And I imagine, ladies listening, you can just hear it in your voice that you are a very, very sweet and tender soul. So, for anybody listening who maybe is a similar personality, just wanting to be kind to everybody and be loving and sweet and nice, but sometimes the world can trample you when you are that personality. What encouragement would you give them?
I think the encouragement is just to still be that person that you are, that you were made to be, and be kind. Kindness is, honestly, when we're talking about kindness, when I left Brighton after my mom passed, this all kind of culminated, and it was something that I was looking for. I was unhappy in that job. I'd been there 14 years. I'd gone through this difficult time at the end, and I was looking for job opportunities. Nothing was coming. I was still feeling down in the dumps. When my mom passed away, or during that time when I was with her shortly beforehand, I was looking on Facebook, and I felt like my prayers were answered. I had a couple places in my head that I thought someday when I retire, I'd love to work in the ladies area at the Ace Hardware in Newburgh, or I would love to work at Ken and Daughter Jewelers because Edie, the owner, is just such a kind, loving person, and it would be fun because it correlates with my job that I did at Brighton. But I just thought in my head, oh, that'll be down the road someday. Well, when my mom was in hospice and I was in and out of being with her, you know, sometimes you'd go out and sit on the couch and catch up on your social media time and your emails and things. Well, there was a Facebook post from Ken and Daughter that they were looking for somebody. And I'm getting to my point, which is I called Edie, the owner, and I said that this might not be the right timing, but if you're ever needing, you know, help in the future, I would be interested in a job opportunity there. I saw that you have this post. And she said, what's wrong with the timing right now? And I said, you know, I'm here in North Carolina with my mom who's, you know, dying. And she said, we will wait for you. She said, we can teach you everything that you need to learn here to do the job, but no one can teach kindness. So that was to me like that affirmation that all the years that maybe kindness was a negative, somebody flat out said to me that no one can teach kindness and that was valuable to her for me to work there, that I was a kind person. So I thought that was, you know, just be that person and know that it isn't a negative quality to have. And, you know, sometimes you do have to speak up for yourself, but you just learn that in your own way and in your own experiences that it's okay to be firm, that it doesn't mean that you still can't be a nice person. Yeah.
Well, and you are one of the nicest ladies. And that takes me to our final point here. And that is, ladies, you can come meet this very nice lady, Susan, in person. Because we have, in addition to this podcast, we have 4 live events each year. And our next one is coming up on Thursday, October 4th. It's going to be at the Grand Ballroom in downtown McMinnville. And we already have 250 women registered. And at that point, we're full. However, we do get cancellations as well. So just jump on our website, storynighthope.com. There likely will be a ticket that opens. And so you can just click on the website and register to get a ticket. And then you get to meet Susan in person. And she'll be there helping us. She'll actually be pouring a little bit of wine in case anybody would like to have a glass of wine while you are at the event. We have some snacks available when you arrive, and both wine and non-alcoholic drinks to choose from. And then we gather together around a bunch of round tables, and you get to meet some new friends, and we will have one lady share her life story. Now, normally what we do is record these, and once they are recorded, we put them on our YouTube channel and pull the audio and put it on this podcast. However, this time we will not be recording the story, and that's because there are some very sensitive topics within our speaker's story, so we don't want to put any of her things, name, photo, or her story out on social media or anything online. So if you want to hear her story, you really do need to come in person. It's a beautiful, powerful story of how a community rallied around her as she got out of domestic violence. And we're going to have some special guests there, representatives from several of our local resources, Henderson House and CASA and Abuse Recovery Ministry and Services and Juliet's House. So lots of great resources, especially for those of you listening who, whether it's your story or a woman in your life you love who might be going through any kind of abuse and you'd like to learn a little bit more about how to be helpful, then this is a great evening to attend. We would love to have you there. Tickets are free. And if you are listening to this after October 2nd, 2025, still go onto our website because you can see whatever event will be upcoming next and you can get your tickets for that one. Susan, I want to thank you so much for being part of the Story Night team because you have been so helpful and, again, just so kind. Thank you for joining us and caring about the vision of Story Night. We really appreciate it so much. And thank you for coming on to tell a little bit about who you are and your story and what's gone on in your life. We also want to take a moment to thank our state representative, Lucetta Elmer. She is the one providing the platform for this season of Story Night because she believes strongly in the power of stories and was a Story Night speaker herself. And thank you, ladies, so much for tuning in. We hope you were blessed and encouraged by this story and that you come back next time for our next story. Remember, you have a story. Your story matters, and you are not alone.